Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
All right, Coach. We've had a rough week in the stock market, man.
Man, 1,000 points in a day?
1,000 points in a day. Historical drop.
Yeah, I got money vested in places, so.
Well, you know, you got to be diversified, and we knew there was a correction, right?
Oh, it was coming.
We always talk about, you know, the market might dip, but if it goes down 10%, that's basically qualifies as a correction. And many investors realize that it's going to happen. My only concern is, because we're at 10 now, this market started out at 28,869. And today it closed at 25,766. So that's a 3,000-point drop, which is better than 10%. So now the question is it going to be a deeper drop than 10%, or have we basically bottomed out?
You know, I love my brother from Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
He said, don't move the money.
Don't move the money. Well, he got a lot of money. But for the small investor, you know, I look back at the 9/11 incident, right? And the market, that was probably the last, other than 2008, those were two major events in the past that have really made the market drop. But I still believe that investors can withstand the 10% drop. If it goes past 10%, for the average working person, it's time to sit on the sideline, okay? Other people that's got money like our boy Hathaway, you know, it doesn't hurt them, okay? Total value that has been lost over the last couple of days is like $2 trillion.
Yeah, that's what I heard, $2 trillion.
That's a lot of money, okay? There are investors that have money set aside that is going to, at some point in time, get back in the market and buy these bargain-type stocks. Average guy, 401k, 403b, they don't have the kind of cash to withstand a drop greater than 10%. So you get out of the market and you wait a 30-day period. This is my philosophy.
Okay.
Why? Because the market is not going to gain back that 3,000 points in a month. That's not going to happen. You might see the market go up maybe 1,000 at best. At that point, when you felt like the market is basically stabilized and it's going back, now you can go back in. And it's contrary to what a lot of them say. It's not the timing of the market. It's the time in the market.
Time in the market.
To a degree. The thing that concerns me about the coronavirus is this. It's been isolated for the most part outside of the United States.
Yes.
You look at a country like China, and what it has done to their economy is their travel's been restricted. Commerce has basically come to a stop. And at some point in time, that economy is going to feel the effects in a greater way than it is currently. If we don't get a handle on coronavirus and it becomes a major outbreak, that means that same kind of phenomenon might take place in this country, where you basically have to shut down schools, shut down a number of public type of events, possibly even manufacturing, to keep it from spreading. And of course, they say they're working on vaccine. We don't know how long that's going to take to get to the marketplace to make it available for those that may have contracted it. So there's a lot of unknowns about this particular coronavirus, which disturbs me. And I had, you know, instructed my customers to get out of the market because I truly believe that it's going to be a 30% drop.
You think it's going to be 30%?
30%. When it's all said and done, we're going to be back down around 24,000. We're going to go from a 28,000 high stock market to about 24, 23. now, there's plenty of room to make up, but it's going to be a period of time before we get back to where we're at now, only because we don't know 30 days from now how this virus is going to be contained that is already in the United States. We've already had cases that have already been reported, and you still have movement of people in and out of the country that go to places that probably don't have the strict requirements for travel like we do, and being able to quarantine people. So it is a major concern for me, as an investor.
And I always, you know, like I'm a Michigan State graduate, so I always get information from Michigan State. So the president from Michigan State, he said about the coronavirus, he said, before students depart for next week's spring break, I would like to provide an update on some of the current and pending items. So the coronavirus and an inclusive campus, right?
Right.
So he said Michigan State continues to monitor this virus, but to ensure safety on our campus, right? Beyond public health considerations, we are concerned about the well-being of students affected by the impact of the outbreak, including the worries about family members in quarantine areas, as well as travel restrictions. A university committee is making contingency plans to accommodate the housing, educational, and other needs of international students who might not be able to travel home this summer. Mm. That's how serious it is, right? As well as the needs of students expecting to arrive for the fall semester. So some of you ain't going to be able to leave.
Nope. And some won't be able to come in.
That's right, because of the disease.
Yeah.
Another dimension of concern is the impact on the civilians. Many of our affected community members live daily with anxiety and should not experience jokes, blame, or harmful, hurtful expressions. MSU is an exclusive and global university that at times this is like a call for an extra measure of understanding and awareness. So he's basically saying that when it comes to dealing with the issues of the coronavirus, and then you just know they just had that thing at the Warden Center with the hanging of the dolls.
Mm-hmm.
They had the dolls like it was some type of artifact with all black people. So Michigan State ain't never been like that. I graduated from there. It was never like that. But I know that they're probably making fun of the international students.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he got the virus. He got the disease. He got that. So I already know what they're doing because of the level of ignorance that's going on right now throughout our country.
Right. It is, man. And it's because we don't know. It's the unknown that have people, you know, with this high level of anxiety. I was reading today about South Korea, Kim Jong-un, right?
Yes.
So they had people quarantined, and evidently one of the patients that was in quarantine left to go to a public bath, to go get bathed. Do you know what the result of that was?
Yes,
they shot him dead. Okay? They shot him dead. They said, well, you weren't supposed to leave this facility because you were under quarantine. We don't know how many people you've come in contact with or whatever. So the penalty is death. And they shot the guy, man. In public. They won't let it spread. They don't spread it, man. That's how they have to.
I ain't laughing at what he did.
Right.
I'm laughing at his mindset.
Yeah.
Like, he like, look, I ain't got time to be dealing with all these health issues. Mm-hmm. You the one left, pow.
Yeah.
I told you, don't leave.
Right. And our president said he a good guy. Kim Jong-un is a good guy. No,
he killed his daddy brother.
Okay.
All his uncles.
Right.
Because they supposed to have been leaders. He's like, oh, they all got to die. They can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, man. So, you know, we rabbit holed off of that, but still. That just tells me the level of fear that is around the world when it comes to this epidemic, man. You know, I think the last one that we had on this scale was probably AIDS. You know, when everybody was all concerned about AIDS being, you know, a major cause of death in the world, and they was able to get it under control. But I don't think the stock market never reacted like this.
Yeah, but it's like you said earlier, when you look at a ripple effect of something, and you think about a country like China that does a lot of commerce with us.
Worldwide. Every country in the world, man.
Yeah, so we're talking about the technology that they have and the healthcare and the mortgage system that we had when you go back to the NAFTA.
Yeah.
Remember that? That's the Bill Clinton's deal that flopped in 2001 that brought that ripple effect to 9/11,
okay.
Right? But they still do that commerce with the mortgages and insurances, right? We get a mortgage insurance and they trade and healthcare and they trade products with us.
Right. So now that brings up another question. Is this virus able to live on products that we import?
Oh, man. Okay. See, Tony, now you take
automobiles,
you being furniture, devil's
food,
advocate, man.
Toys. I don't know. You know, maybe it dies after a certain period of time. You know, maybe there's an incubation period where the virus is no longer you know, contagious.
What do you think? Do you think it's man-created to try to be like, get rid of the number one traitor of our country?
This is only my theory, man. I have not read anything about it. It's just me thinking about this whole concept of this coronavirus. And I think it stems from people eating rodents, okay, that we know carry all kinds of unforeseen types of diseases. And I'm just thinking, you know, like we had the swine flu, right?
That's right.
They said it came from pigs. That's why it got the name of swine flu. So this might be something where people were eating rats, dogs.
Bats.
You know, bats. And as a result of that, they contracted this virus, and then it started to spread. You know, and interesting about the doctor in China that found out about this virus came under, heavy scrutiny from the government. You know, why are you reporting this type of a virus that's causing panic in the community? And he was a dentist, okay? And he understood the extent of this virus and started to ring the bell to warn all of other folks that was in the healthcare system to be on the watch out for this virus. They actually locked this guy up, man, in China, and he wound up dying. And this has only been a few months ago, this doctor. And now, look what it is now, man. It's a full-blown, almost an epidemic. And we don't know if the numbers are really true that's coming out of China, all right? It could be far more people with this virus than we know, because they don't know how it's being transmitted. Last story I heard, there was a lady I heard in California that had contracted it and had not been out of this country, has not been around any people that traveled in from other countries. So now that raises another flag as to, well, then how did she contract this virus then? Back to what I talked about before. Was it on any products, goods that might have came from China that we weren't aware of?
Yep.
So this thing could get totally out of control, man, because it's so much unknown at this time. But I know the Center for Disease Control is, you know, working day and night to try to come up with some kind of a vaccine. And I heard the last I heard was like 3 weeks out before. Then you still got to get manufactured. And the other thing is a lot of the components that are made, that antibiotics are made with, come from China. All right. All these ingredients that are main ingredients in antibiotics.
Yes, sir.
Derive out of China. So now you got another dilemma, right?
Yeah, like you can't even use a product that's going to heal the people.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I've never thought that we would see something that would affect the commerce of the world like this. But because it's in China, it's not some little small isolated country. It's not like Cuba or Puerto Rico. We're talking about the country that has the largest population in the world, you know, billions of people. So stay tuned, man. See what happens. And, you know, take precautions. You know, they're saying, you know, wash your hands constantly. Cover when you cough, just as a precaution. And they said the face mask really is not the cure-all. But if that makes you feel comfortable, you know, wear it. So, but yeah, that has to do with our economy, man. That's a lot to do with our economy. This may slow down because we're not getting the flow of commerce that we had in the past, which could throw us into a recession. So, these next few months are going to be very critical for our economy.
This is going to be a, right, there it is. So, you're hearing about the economy. And guess what? It's for all the tax season people.
Okay.
That's where we at right now. And tax ballers, and I'm not making fun of nobody, because you do whatever you want with your tax money. But if I was you, I would put at least 6 months of surplus income away.
Yeah, hang on to this tax return. It might be very well needed down the road, not understanding all the economic type of conditions that may be coming at us.
Man, this is because with the mortgages bubbling up, the prices of the houses are getting higher and higher and higher, but the interest rate is lower and lower and lower and lower. I'm seeing houses, Tony, right now, that I'm like, hold on, that's 169? That's 189,000?
Yeah.
That's 244. I remember seeing that. That was like 150.
Okay. the supply and demand. You know, the supply of good housing is at a low. So that's what happens, man. And people got this quick, easy cash you can go to the bank and get. So I got a friend of mine right now that's selling a home, and she put it on the market for $100,000, and I'm thinking, you'll never get it. Well, show you much honest, she got two offers. House in Hikes. And not in Woodcliff.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
He must got good infrastructure inside.
Nice home. Yeah. Really nice home, man. Really nice home.
Somebody trying to buy the block, they like, look, let me get this good house. And when they level everything else, I'm going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
They in it for the long haul.
Yep. So, you know, they were surprised as well. They said, should have put it higher, right? Well, it's too late now.
Yeah, it's too late. You got two offers. And how long did it take for them to get the two offers, Tony?
One day.
Wow.
Yep. It was on the market a couple weeks.
One day.
Got two offers in one day.
That don't happen.
Okay.
That don't happen, man.
That don't happen in North Shores.
No. That don't happen. That happened in the rich neighborhoods when the houses is like $1 million.
Right. Yep.
Because if people got the $1 million money, they had the money in the escrow, and I got the money in the bank already. No contingencies, nothing. Bring your lawyer, my lawyer. Let's get this. Give me this title.
Right. There's no qualifying, all right? We know when we show up, we qualify.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing that I had to tell her is that, you know, if they put an offer in, you know, the questions that should be asked is, have you been pre-qualified?
Yep. I was meeting with somebody the other day, one of my coworkers, and she had asked me a question. And I'm going to leave her name out, but I'm just going to share this with the audience. She had co-signed for a home for her daughter, and it's almost to the point of paying it off. And her daughter wanted to pull out an equity mortgage loan on the value of the property. But she was going to pay off the rest of the mortgage to get her mother's name off the mortgage.
Okay.
So then I was like, that's a great idea.
Okay.
And she was like, how do I do that? I said, well, when the title comes, it's going to have your name on it and her name on it. I say, in the past, I've seen people do a quick claim deed.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I told her to do.
Yep.
So I'm like, so now you hear from my mentor, Tony. You go down to the county building, quick claim deed. So I want this person's name off. They sign and say they don't want their name on there. Boom, you got it. You got a clean title with just your daughter's name on that. So that's for the audience. When you're paying off properties and things like that, get that other lien. Not a lien. When it comes to cars, when the titles, it's lien holders. You just go get another title. But when it's a house, it's a deed.
So we got some information about that for next week. Preventing family loan problems is basically what you're talking about.
That's right. Okay. And I told her, I was like, man, I mean, if your daughter only got that much left and she paid it off, you had to trust her.
Yeah, yeah. So you were just as an example, it was a $50,000 home, right? And she owes $20,000 on it.
Yes, sir.
But the house is appreciated. She can go back in there and got some equity in it. And they say, okay, we'll give you 30. She takes 20, you know, pay that 20 off, and she's got 10. But yet now she has the rest of that note that just got kicked back up, right?
Yep.
Because you took that home equity loan, but you paid your mother off out of that deal. But now you saddled with that other. Now you have $40,000 basically.
Yeah, she got $40,000 to pay back. Yep. That's what that looks like.
She was at 20.
Yeah, her mother was okay with. She's like, my daughter's okay with that. I just want my name out the mortgage, and that's fine.
That's fine.
So I think it was like $50,000. I was like, okay.
Okay, that's a good move.
Yeah, it's a good move.
When you're helping your children out.
Yep, and then now you're cutting the terms of the years. It's almost the same years. They had a 15-year. It's almost the same years. It was 6. She'll have another year, but her mother's off the mortgage, and she got the home.
Yep.
So
that was a good story.
Yeah, that's a good story. Because now both of them going to have credit to say you paid the house off.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be that more on their credit report, a house going to say paid off in both of their names, but her mother's name's not going to be on the deed no more.
Right.
So that's going to be a win for her mama, for her credit score.
Sigh of relief.
Yep, because the credit, I was telling her a credit-to-debt ratio would go up higher now.
Yes.
Because she'll have more credit than debt.
Yep.
And she got longevity. She's close to retirement age, so credit score going to be a lot higher. Because you paid off a large ticket item like a 30-year mortgage, 30, 15-year mortgage, that always boosts your credit score. So that's why I say I like hearing stories like that. So I just share that with the audience just because somebody might be in a situation like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not trying to put nobody's business out there. I didn't name the person, but it's just
confidentiality. What you do, though. I mean, those are the kind of stories you want to talk to your audience.
Yep.
Is that because if you ever, you know, are faced with that kind of a dilemma, you know, you have a better understanding on how to get through that.
Yeah. So I know we didn't get a chance to talk about sports, but I want to.
Oh yeah.
Sports on a local level. For college, Lamar Bird Chapman, your nephew.
Right.
Is out at Northern Illinois. They doing their thing. They like first place in their division. And I remember when he came there, they was in a stinking basement.
Right. Yeah, he down there with Monty.
Yeah, and Mark Montgomery needed him.
Yeah.
He needed him. Yeah. But see, what people don't realize about Lamar Chapman, he's a great developer, a talent. But more than that, he has the relationship building when it comes to young men. Mm-hmm. He know how to get after them, but he do know how to make you respect you, and he'll crack jokes on you, and he'll make it fun in the process of developing you.
Yeah.
And that's what he does. He's a great recruiter and everything. I just can't wait to the day and time when he comes, he has his own program. Or I would settle for if Mark Montgomery gets a bigger program, like when Tom Izzo say it's over, which he should be saying it's over in about 2 years, I think Mark Montgomery should have that Michigan State job.
Yeah, because that's how he got the Northern Illinois job, right? So he's elevated Lamar, a.k.a. Bird, to the assistant head coach.
Yes, sir.
So Bird is his assistant head coach now. And like you say, if he leaves, Bird should be the next in line for that job.
I'll take him with me. If he go to a bigger program, I'm taking Lamar with me.
Yeah, he probably would go. Yeah, bigger payday. Bigger payday, man. But he has, you know, I've talked to him. Matter of fact, I'm going down Wednesday.
They're playing Saturday. Western.
They're playing Western. Yeah. Yep. So I just talked to him this afternoon. And so we were coming down to see him play. And he do have aspirations of having his own program.
Okay, all right.
You know, because he was a little bit salty about Pike when he took the Rutgers job
and didn't bring him
and didn't take him to, you know, left him at Stony Brook basically.
Yeah.
And he didn't feel like that was right.
So. And now Rutgers struggling.
Yeah.
They got a decent team, but they always like this.
Yeah. Well.
He thought he could do it without him.
Yeah.
Man, you got never
big raise, man, going to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a. I think he went from like 750 to about two.
Yeah, almost 1.7 or something like that. So you telling me you don't got 150 for my man?
Come on, man. You don't?
You don't got nothing but 150 for me and some housing? Give me 150,000 and some housing for me. I done been on the road recruiting for you. Because he was grinding when he was at Stony Brook.
That's all he did, man.
They had a top-notch program, a nothing team in Long Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he brought him to they made it to the NCAA.
They made the NCAA, man.
And they lost to Kentucky.
Yep. Him in the first round. Yeah. Never been, though. Never made been. History. And one of the kids at Stony Brook, fifth-year senior, is playing at Rutgers.
Wow.
Okay.
So he was able to bring one of the guys.
Yeah, so they were getting the talent at Stony Brook. And as a matter of fact, I mean, you know, some of their residual talent is still there.
Daddy.
So, yeah, he did an excellent job down there, man. Central, he started out at Central with Jay and then went to Toledo. And from Toledo over to Stony Brook, and from Stony Brook to Northern Illinois. And they're in first place in the MAC.
Yep. He done won. He has won everywhere he's been.
Yes. He has, man. He's a great resume.
Yeah.
So I just hope he does.
I like him. I just always remember him as being as a little kid and then just knowing him from the neighborhood. You like to see guys like that aspire, that worked hard. That's all he did. I always seen him work hard.
Man.
He worked hard.
He's sort of like the Kobe of coaching.
Yes, he is. he got the personality.
He just worked hard at it, man.
Yep.
He's been he's got a story to tell, too. You know, he's got a story to tell.
So, yeah, I know this is a financial show, but sometimes we got to highlight our people. That's
no doubt. You got to give them high fives, man, when they're out there in the world.
Yeah.
And making it happen. Making a name for themselves, you know, blazing trails and letting folks know that, you know, all things are possible if you really dedicate it to your craft.
That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to get back on the beat so I can start running. So when he come home, I'll run him.
he going
to
run.
Yeah, my doctor, I'm getting closer and closer to getting cleared to hit that road. I can't wait till I hit it, too. I can't wait till I'll be able to put my sneakers on and hit the path. But getting back to our financial part of our show, I know we was on taxes last week, right? So it says, if you are self-employed, and the self-employed part, people walk into that and think like, oh, I can get me a doing business as a LLC or a nonprofit. Man, this stuff is real work, man.
Okay.
Payroll, workers' comp, unemployment insurance.
Yep. IRS.
keeping your books right. I was at, one of my mentors told me, say, Chauncey, you want to pay somebody to audit you if you're a nonprofit. You want to get audited. Mm-hmm. He said, once you get audited, that helps you get more money. You get to another level where you get more grants and more federal dollars because they like, have you been audited? Everybody asks you that.
Right.
And it's an audit, it's a credible place that audited you. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, audit sound like bad for personal people. He said, yeah. But he said, when it comes to your own business, if you get audited and you have a nonprofit, that gives you a certain level for they can know your books are together.
So they did it right. The audit came back with a with 5 stars. Yep. So yeah, you are capable of handling the money.
Yep.
So being a fiduciary. And that's what it's all about when you're in a nonprofit, is being a fiduciary to make sure that the money is going to the right places, because we have also seen in the news lately.
That's right.
When it doesn't happen, a lot of folks get affected, and it's not good. So, and maybe next week when we got more time, we may talk about some of the financials that caused created that the situation that they're in now.
And Muskegon Family Care, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we got a research project. I got a research project ahead of me this weekend, I guess.
Okay.
So I can have that information on the table. And I'm not trying to blast anybody at all. But it's all about, this is what I noticed. When you doing something and you really doing it out for what you're supposed to be doing it for, it's checks and balances everywhere.
Yep.
All the time. Yep. It's checks and balances. So you can't get mad at the checks and balances. You can't ignore them because that's policy in place. And Michigan has one of the strictest codes when it comes to doing stuff for other people.
Yeah.
Paperwork, paper trail, got to be there. You got this document. You got that document. Did you do this? Is your board in place? Is this in place? How did you make this decision about the money? That stuff is critical when it comes to being self-employed, because when tax time comes, they expect you. And for businesses, it's usually quarterly.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get it. I get a tax. They come from corporate. And, you know, I've had two, and they haven't been back. You know why? Because everything was straight. There was nothing out of order, all right, from financial services, right? I'm fiduciary. People give me their money. They entrust me with their money. I got to be right. People come in and pay their bills. I got to make sure that that money is being accounted for. Okay, that's the main thing as a business owner or an owner of a nonprofit or a for-profit. The chief financial officers, their responsibility is to make sure that the money is right, because there are so many people depending on the decisions that you make, right? You make bad decisions, cost us money, then we have to let people go because we can't afford to keep them no more. So those responsibilities are major and should not be taken lightly. So that's why, like you said, when an audit come in, that's a good thing, because they got to find out if we're doing the things in the right way.
That's it. And it's all about, I would say this, in the classes and courses I took about finances, ethics, man.
Ethics.
Man, that's
101.
That ethics is bigger than any stats class, any math class. The ethics in it, what's right about what you're doing when you're empowering other people and you have an opportunity to function and run a business. And you should not look at taxes as a bad thing. If a business owner, taxes is something like, hey, I'm appreciating, I'm able, I got it.
Right.
And I can pay this number without trying to beat the system.
That's part of it. I mean, that's what America's about, man. Free enterprise. And a part of that is that we pay taxes.
Yeah, it's a song. And I was like, I'm not getting off the subject, but it's a song. It's a rapper by the name of 2 Chainz. And okay, he got a song called Uncle Sam, right?
Okay, I've never heard of it.
He said when he got to the point when he was rapping, he was good enough and he became platinum. He went crazy when he saw the tax bill for $2 million.
Okay.
Right? But see, this when it comes to having friends as business owners. And then Puff Daddy said, oh, $2 million? He said, I just paid $50 million.
Okay.
In taxes.
Right.
He was like, what? He said, I wrote a check for $50 million.
Yep.
He said, in taxes? He was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when our comfort zone is $2 million and somebody else is $50 million, I just say, hey, trust the process. Go through the process. Learn the process. Fail forward. Do it right. Hire the right people around you, right?
Right.
And eventually, you'll be paying a $50 million tax bill. I want to pay a raise your hand if you want to pay a $50 million tax bill. Me.
In the highest tax bracket they got. Where is it at? I want to be there, right?
I want to pay a $50 million tax bill. Chauncey Williams, I would like to do that. I am happy.
$500 million.
I am happy and grateful now that I paid a $50 million tax bill, and it's in the divine presence of helping others.
Okay.
That's my prayer right there.
That's it, man. That's all right. I'm down with it.
So I got scripture for us today, and it's out of Genesis chapter 14, verses 18 through 20. And it says in verse 18, "And Melchizedek, the king of Salem, and the priest of God's Most High, brought Abram, some bread and wine. And Melchizedek," in verse 19, "blessed Abram with this blessing. Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heavens and earth." Verse 20, "And blessed be God Most High, who has defeated your enemies for you. Then Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth of all his goods he had recovered." The taxes.
Okay.
He's like, "Man, I'm blessed, man. You blessed me with the wine and the bread. I got overflow. Here, man. Here go the tenth of it. Here go the tax on that."
Right.
Wow, that's the season for taxes. But I look at it like this. My interpretation, Tony, was this. It says, when people look at us, and this is really critical, because we are in the public's eye, like what you do, what I do, what other people do, they need to see what God has accomplished in our lives. They need to see that.
Amen.
And we're not talking about no trophies and no money.
Nope.
We need to see the ethics and the integrity of what you do and how you do it. So when someone has a problem, your name comes up as a solution.
Yep.
Let's be solution-based for our community. If we're business owners, if we're in a capacity where we're serving others, let's be the solution where people can see our integrity in what we do. If we're spending money, if we're saving money, if we're running a nonprofit, if we got kids in front of us, let's have the integrity of the essence. So they say, man, God in that brother's life, God in that sister's life, they get it.
That's right. They're trustworthy. That's all it. Right? That's it, man. They're trustworthy. When people ask me about Chauncey Williams, I say, hey, you're not going to find a better guy. Trust him. He's going to take care of you.
That's right.
Just be honest. That's all I'm telling you to do. Be honest.
Be honest. Okay? Tell me what's wrong.
Yeah.
Because don't lie to me. I got to be able to see it in black and white.
That's it.
And I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you how to get out of it. I might laugh and giggle at things because I've been in the Puff Daddy situations. I've been in worse situations. So they don't bother me seeing you having a problem. So don't be ashamed. And like same here for Tony. I'm going to tell people all the time, like, I can get your credit together. You can get some insurance afterwards, or you need to invest. I always throw his name out because we want to be in spaces where you with people you know that's going to go above and beyond and not charge you something for every time they got to say something to you.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you come out of my office, it's going to be $100.
Yeah.
That's that phone call you call, that's going to be $50.
$50.
I had an attorney like that once upon a time.
I've seen him.
I can't. So then I had to switch it up and get somebody that was really more personable with me that knew me as a person.
Right. No, man. Yeah, they get a bill. That was that phone call you had. You thought that was free? Uh-uh.
Yep. So I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your fine success with 103.7 The Beat.